Taylor Swift then, and we'll do.
If you could just sell that guitar, you'd almost have enough money to buy a new laptop.
Bro. I'm like, I started signing up to sell it on this app, but it's like, it's making me enter like my life story. Because it's like, it's meant for like businesses. Like,
okay, gotcha.
And I'm literally just trying to sell one guitar.
You're a businessman.
Yeah.
That reminds me, did you listen to any of the new Beyonce album?
Mm-mm. I was too busy listening to the Cole mixtape and then the Black Keys new album. I saw that she came out with a new album. I actually saw I got good reviews too, but I didn't check it out at all.
Yeah, I haven't listened much to it yet. Just you know, stuff I hear on radio for the most part. It's certainly different, and actually maybe this is a better conversation for Red, because I have kind of a tying thread there, but Beyonce going country wasn't on my 2024 bingo card.
Yeah, I wonder what prompted that. I'll have to listen to like an interview or something.
Yeah, I've been listening to a podcast where they've been talking about it a little bit, and then obviously seen some, you know, Twitter and whatnot. So I don't have like a full comprehensive analysis yet, but I'm just gathering bits and pieces. It's interesting for sure.
Is it like, have you listened to much?
I listened to some tracks. She did a couple of covers. She did a cover of Jolene, but like reworked it a little bit.
Is it like full like country, or is it like country like pop kind of?
I mean, it's a blend for sure, but yeah. There's like some country songs on there for sure. She did a song with Post Malone.
That's cool.
Yeah, there's some other stuff on there. Like I said, I haven't really dug into it too deep. I was just curious if you had gotten around to it.
No, I do want to check it out, though.
Yeah, it's interesting at the very, very least. Whether or not you like it, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
But I think that's, again, it ties into Red in a similar way. I'll bring it together when we get there. But this is episode 3 of Flip the Record featuring Vance Joy today.
Yeah, dude. What's going on?
Oh, dude, I can't say same old, same old. It's been a few weeks, man.
It has, yeah.
So, yeah, I was back from Cabo. You were out in Arizona. Rocks were beautiful.
Yeah, rocks were nice. Canyon was grand.
What's that Cam? Oh, dude, I listened to Cam Patterson was on Andrew Santino's podcast. That motherfucker's funny, man.
Oh, yeah, he's hilarious.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Kill Tony in a while, but, yeah, he always cracks me up. Yeah, I like Santino a lot, too. He's funny.
I was just thinking of Cam Patterson's rocks bit.
You know, yeah.
I don't know if I can say that, but.
Santino's. I don't know what I was going to say. I was going to bring up another comedian, but then I just blanked on his name.
Yeah, anyways, he was on Santino's pod. And I like Santino, so yeah. he's a good interviewer too. Anyhow. All right, bits, thoughts, notes. It's been a long 3 weeks and a lot's happened, and
I got a quick story real quick, and then I read a book on Mac Miller and I want to get into that. So, quick story, driving back for the canyon the one day we went down with the Hualapai tribe runs this like whitewater rafting. So you go in the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon and you do, it's like an hour and a half or around there where there's like actual rapids and like some intense rapids.
Hell yeah.
And then you stop for lunch and then it's like a three and a half hour boat ride down the rest of the river and it's like relaxing. You just take in the views. Anyway, super cool experience, but the temperature outside was like, I don't know, 60, 65, but the water in the river is like 42 degrees. So it's.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
It's really, really cold. Yeah. So you get soaked when you're going through the rapids, obviously. And then, like, when you're going through down just the relaxing part of the ride, like, we dried off. And then, like, the last 15 minutes, we got soaked again. Like, it picked up right at the end. So basically, everyone's soaked, and it was a long day. You had to get there at 7 in the morning, and then we were done around 5, and then we still had a 2.5 hour bus ride. Or sorry, we were done around 3:34, and then we had a two and a half hour bus ride back to the lodge.
Jesus.
So it's a long day, right?
Yeah.
So everyone gets in the bus to go back, and the bus driver was like, he had the energy of like he wanted to do like his stand up act or like,
oh no,
like just the like I'm gonna say whatever's on my mind energy. And everyone in the bus is like, we have the energy of, we have a 2 hour bus ride, we just had a long day, a lot of us had to wake up, if you weren't staying at the lodge you had to drive an hour or two or three to get there, we just want to ride in silence,
fuck off. Yeah.
And so like this guy, it was funny too, like we first started the bus ride and he like stops you know like 5 or 10 minutes, he's like slowing down, he's like, look, there's an eagle's nest. And it's like, dude, like, you can't
please shut the fuck
you
up.
You can't be stopping for Eagle's Nest. And he stops at this one like scenic overlook, and it was cool. And, you know, it was fine that he stopped because we look, everyone got a good look at it. And then he's like, who wants to stop and take pictures? And everyone's like, no, like nobody was mean. And then just throughout the bus ride, he couldn't go more than 3 minutes without saying something, even if it's just talking about, he's either talking about the history of Arizona and the canyon or whatever, or he's just talking about like the traffic. Like,
oh, he was talking about the history of the canyon, you know, the one that's been around for hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh, I really want to pass this guy. This guy's driving so slow. Just like,
oh,
and it was brutal. It's just one of those, like, nobody wants to be mean and say like, hey man, like, can you please just tone it down a little bit? But at the same time, it's like, dude,
fuck you.
Read the room.
It's like when you get on a flight, usually a cheaper airline, at like 7 in the morning, and the flight attendants are like, our crew here. We have Batman and Robin up front. We got the Joker and Harley Quinn out back. And our captain today is Superman and Wonder Girl.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, it's the fucking worst. I hear you 100%. And, like, yes, very boring job. 2.5 hour bus rides back and forth through the desert. I could see where that gets old quickly. But yeah, after like maybe 3 or 4 of those one-liners, you kind of get you hear the groan even if it isn't audible.
Yeah, but he was just one of those people that was oblivious to the groan.
Yeah, he's never bombed in his life because he made himself laugh.
Yeah, but the only reason I wanted to tell the story was at one point he had the radio on like country station, like just a country station, and it was a Chris Stapleton song. I don't remember which one, but Chris Stapleton was singing the chorus. Chris Stapleton has an amazing range. Oh, no. So in the chorus, he was just hitting his range, and the bus driver goes, oh, I can't take this yelling, and he turns the station off the country. We're like, dude, Chris Stapleton hitting notes like that only, you know, 10% of artists can even hit.
Yeah.
And that he considered that yelling. I had to grit my teeth from being like, are you serious?
Bring back Willie Nelson. Can't stand all this new age Gen Z bullshit.
Oh, and then he put it on, like, commercials on a different station. I was like, my brother in Christ, you'd rather listen to commercials than Chris Stapleton hitting a chorus?
I thought you were going to say he started singing along, and that would have been a million times worse.
Yeah, that would have been bad, too.
Oh, man, that's good.
But it was just like, in that one, he kind of muttered to himself. He's like, I can't stand that yelling. I'm like, dude, are you serious? Chris Stapleton has one of the best voices out there.
Well, you know, not everybody's as cultured as you and I.
Yeah, I don't know. Took everything in me to not say something.
Yeah, start waving your fist at the bus driver.
Like, I'm sorry, but that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Shut up, Grandpa!
Yeah, so that was the quick story. And then the other thing I want to touch on for a couple minutes was I read a biography on Mac Miller.
Yeah, you were telling me about this. He's got a new track out right now, too, The Quest.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool, too. So that was a leftover from watching movies with the sound off.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting track because it has almost this, like, ethereal vibe, and you just kind of get – you listen to it, and it's almost, like, sad, kind of.
It's strange because I was thinking I don't know how well it fits on that album necessarily. Like, it feels like a more – late in the catalog type of song.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, a bit surprised, like, it wouldn't have been dug up for, say, I don't know, Swimming, you know? It is what it is, but yeah, I thought it was, getting that at this point is cool. I've refined my take. I still am not a huge fan of the post-mortem releases. I guess my thought about that is, like, basically, if you're going to do a post-mortem release, somebody's making money off this shit. So if you're going to make money off this shit, at least, like, be active and be like, hey, we're donating it to, you know, drug and mental health awareness charities. Instead of, hey, look, we all loved Mac. Here's another song from his catalog. Meanwhile, somebody's pocketing all that cash coming in from the streaming, you know?
Yeah, I don't think for a track like that, there's not a lot of revenue from streaming.
No, it's not a lot, but it's something.
So say that track gets, I don't know, 25 million streams, 50 million streams, and that's probably being generous. I mean, that might be a couple grand.
Is that, like, all it is?
Dude, it's pennies on the – it's like a percentage of a penny
much,
for the
– I didn't realize it was that small. God damn.
Well, that's just a guess, but I can probably – figure it out real quick.
Yeah, my guess was going to be like 50 grand.
Oh, no chance.
$150,000's really, in the grand scheme of things, not that much, though.
No, but there's so many songs. Well, actually, yeah. Spotify shelled out $9 billion in last year for all that, like, streaming payouts.
Yeah, do that math, though.
So, for 50 million yearly plays, that's the equivalent. Oh, this is from Quora. I don't know if I...
I mean, throw it out there. It's not the most reputable source, but...
There's no way. This says for a million streams, estimated to be around $4,000 to $7,000. There's no chance.
Oh, wow.
And then this one says there's a DIY artist, 10 million streams on Spotify, $40,000. I guess that's about the same, actually. Same conversion. But you know what? I'm going to have to do some more research into this because that actually seems like it's more than I thought it would be.
Spotify, if you're listening, you're on the hit list next, buddy.
Well, no, I like in a positive way.
Oh, did I miss something? You said a million for $40,000?
No, it was a million $4,000 to $7,000.
Oh.
So.
You're on my hit list anyways. Watch out.
I didn't think it would be that much, though. But anyway, that was a...
What a sidetrack.
Going back to the side or the song, it's a cool song.
It is.
Yeah, it had a cool vibe to it. But anyway, going back to the biography was cool too because it told the story of like how he got started and it really went into the Pittsburgh rap scene a lot because there wasn't much of a rap scene at the time. Mm-hmm. Like Wiz Khalifa was the first real rapper to break out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, big time we're talking. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, for sure. And then Mac kind of after that. So it kind of went into like the trials and tribulations of people not believing in him, one, because of where he was from, and two, because of it actually went into because he was white.
Yeah.
And that's like another, you know.
And that's not a crazy thing to say.
No, no, yeah. No. But a couple notes that I had that I thought were really cool. Darrell Revis actually paid $5,000 of his own money, and he was playing in the NFL at the time for the Jets, to help Mac record. Like he gave him $5,000 for like recording time. How crazy is that?
Dude, you know Darrell Revis has a couple songs?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He did one with Mac.
Oh, that's right. That's
on one
right.
of
yeah, yeah.
It was one of the mix like his early mixtapes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So not only did he give him $5,000 to record, but he also got him a meeting with Barry Weiss, who signed Kid Rock and Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, that's big time.
So like big time guy. And the funny part of this story is Mac played Kids for Barry Weiss, and he said there weren't any hits on it, so he didn't sign him. like, dude, can you imagine like? Not, I mean, listening to Nikes on My Feet or Kool-Aid and Frozen Pizza and not thinking.
This is the Beatles. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, dude. That's pretty crazy.
There's a, how do I put this? It's gotten better. Let me say this. Before I'm going to preface my take with it's gotten better. The music industry, up until maybe sometime in the middle of this kind of like digital revolution of music, streaming revolution, was very much old people sitting in a room that were like, I know how to make music, and if you don't make music the way I would like you to make music, get fucked. I feel like as things have changed and people can kind of do it more on their own, it's gotten younger, it's gotten fresher. But that doesn't, like, that's a tale as old as time. Like, I feel like every big artist has one of those moments where it's like, oh, I had this hit album, and, you know, Shitster McGee was like, I don't hear a hit, man. You know, some douchebag A&R. And it's like, well, good luck with that.
Yeah, just crazy. So he ended up not getting an offer from that guy. And then, you know, he signed with Rostam Records and rest is history. But
rest is history.
I thought that was crazy that he was, you know, got some money from Darrell Revis. And then one of my other notes was I think part of what makes Mac Miller so great, and I think we talked about this when we did the episode, but young fans that grew up with like Kids in Blue Slide Park, which is like very much like a young, you're young and free and careless. And then as Mac got older, he started making different types of records with, you know, Watch Movies with Sound Off and Good Morning, which is more just kind of like, I don't know,
chiller,
regular rap.
Yeah.
And then later in his catalog, The Divine Feminine, which is a concept album about love, and then Swimming in Circles, which are very much very unique and
heavy.
It's basically like, hey, I'm going through it. And it's like from someone who grew up with him like as a high schooler and then 10 years later when he's making Swimming in Circles, it's like you're going through it in life. Like that's a time when you're realizing like,
right,
oh, wow, like I'm just stuck in a job that I don't like or a relationship that, isn't working out. And
yeah.
So it's kind of cool that I think part of what made him so great was his emotions in music was changing with his age, and that was the same for his fans.
His vulnerability, it's hard to do that. I mean, you know, we're talking about Taylor Swift. It's certainly not easy to do three country albums and then switch over to pop and then switch over into this, like, kind of folky sad girl music. Like, yeah, change is hard.
Yeah.
And some of these artists that we talk about just transcend it masterfully.
Yeah, and it was in the biography, too. Like, it kept saying people kept trying, like, the record and label kept trying to push him in certain directions musically, like, especially around the time of Good Morning and watching movies with the sound off, where they're like, hey, we want you to do a certain sound. And he basically said, like, around that time, like, no, fuck off. I'm going to do what I want to do. And just to have having the prowess to do that at, like, 22, 23, 24.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
21. What, you know.
Yeah,
like,
early 20s.
Yeah, and tell the label, like, no, fuck off. Like, I'm going to do what I want. You know, it's hard to do that.
That's what that is what you can do when you have Kids, Blue Slide Park, and
just the mixtapes in between, right. Macadelic, Best Day Ever.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was, it was cool.
So it was like a biography then.
Yeah. A couple other quicker ones. I think around 2016 or 2018, he was with Post Malone, and they had talked about doing an album together. I don't think they ever hit the – they didn't end up hitting the recording studio, but that would have been a sick album.
There's another combined album that we're going to talk about probably on the next episode that we've been waiting for years and years that seems to be out of touch now, out of reach.
Yeah, but Post Malone and Mac Miller, that would have been a banger.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're both kind of eclectic, weird guys that like to dabble in a lot of different shit.
And they can both do different genres as well.
Right, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I could see a lot of cool stuff coming out of that, especially back and forth type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Or Mac rapping and Post doing the hooks. And
that would have been fucking sick.
That would have been, yeah, absolutely. Another quick one. There was one year where one of his close friends said that Mac told him he had spent $100,000 on coke for himself, which is like...
That's a lot of coke.
That's a lot of coke. I mean, dude, I don't know. That was a crazy one.
That's like, how much coke can one man snort before, like, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, and that kind of, the other big takeaway from the book was that it was like, you know, there's times when you're like, oh, like, he just got some bad coke and an overdose, but it's like getting into like his lifestyle and how much he struggled with drugs, like hearing it from like his close friends and stuff. And
yeah,
it's one of those things when you read more into it, you're like, oh, like it was just a matter of time. Like, when someone's that entrenched and has that many demons, whereas it's not just one drug too, right? It's like 3 or 4 different substances. Like, he'd be gone for days at a time. Nobody knows where he is. And like, it's one of those things where it's going to catch up to you.
That's a coarse kind of rough statement to put out there, but it's true. Like, I don't know, whatever the percentage is, if the percentage is 1% of every time you do drugs, you're going to get fucked. Like, if you're doing drugs, that many drugs every day, like, at some point, that percentage counts, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that kind of ties into the last point, which there's a song on Good Morning where there's two songs that I want to point out. There's Rain or Shine, R.O.S., which is kind of like the... in my opinion, like the intro to the Divine Feminine, where it's like his take on love, and he like put that song out there and probably got good reception. He's like, all right, like, you know, this is another sound I can go into. And he was kind of experimenting with that on Good Morning. And then to me, I think Godspeed on that album is like truly like a cry for help. And it's like a turning point. It's like he admits on that song, he's like, I'm struggling with these drugs every day. Like, I might overdose and someone's going to have to tell my mom that I passed away. Like, he says that, not in those words, but on that song. And he was kind of like getting sober at the time it was several months, but he was getting sober. So it's like him admitting that on that song, it's like the fork in the road where he's like, I know this is the problem. I'm trying to work on it. I hope this doesn't happen. And then, you know, eventually like the sobriety ends and he gets back into the drugs and it does end up happening. But to me, that was like the two different paths. Can I break free? And sadly, he couldn't.
That's such an interesting idea, because, like, I think about Chester doing a similar thing, right? Like, he had gotten sober for a little bit right before his passing. And it's like, there's got to be a support network around you. And maybe there isn't. Maybe it's just not strong enough, or maybe you're too, like, bullheaded to even accept that support. But in your quiet like recesses of your mind, when you're saying to yourself, "Man, this is fucked up. I need help. Please," and vocally saying, "Please help me," and still ending up in this situation, it's hard to conflate those two ideas. You know, it's not even a blame thing. Like, I don't want to blame anybody. It just happens sometimes. But there's got to be some, like, when you physically ask for help, there's got to be some amount of, like, somebody in your life being like, "All right, fine, bet, let's do it."
Yeah, and he did go to rehab and get sober, but it was just one of those things where some people, their demons are just too much. And then the other part of it, which I got from the book that I didn't really get from when we did him on the pod, was that the drugs were a huge part of the creative process.
Yeah, I think we talked about it on that episode in particular.
Yeah. Some of the people that he had worked with and recorded with, like, the one guy said, he's like, "Yeah, like, it wouldn't be unusual for us to be recording and, like, the drug guy to come over, like, multiple times and drop off more drugs." Which is, like...
yeah, he Uber-eats cocaine.
I mean, it's sad, but it's, like, for him to say, like, "Oh, the drug guy came, like, multiple times," it's like, well, how much... That's a lot of drugs. Yeah. And, he kind of said the same thing where he's like, you know, he's doing these drugs, but we're in here in the studio and it's part of the creative process. Who am I? I'm not going to. He's like, "Well, if I thought it was to a point where it was going to be dangerous, I would say something. But if he's just casually doing drugs when we're recording, I'm not going to stop him if that's part of his process."
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you don't want to. I guess it's like this is how the soup's made, right? Like.
Yeah.
If that's what it takes, and so be it. And he's cool with it. I guess I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
yeah, it's crazy, though.
Yeah. And then the last thing, just re-listening to 2009 is just, I mean, it's a sad song, but it's even sadder, like, after reading the book and re-listening to it, it almost sounds like he, like, regrets. Like, there's a lot of regret in part of his past with, I don't know, just the way certain things went down, and that was around the time he died. So, I don't know. It was just, it was a good book.
Wait, he died? When did he die?
Well, 2009, the song.
Oh,
yeah.
I got thrown for a loop there.
No, you're good. But yeah, definitely worth checking out if you're a Big Mac fan.
Was there any juicy tidbits about Ariana in there? I feel like she's a real toxic bitch.
No, I mean, they basically went into, they were friends for a couple years before they ever started dating. And then, the other thing they said that was like, before they were breaking up, like, Ariana would try and get in touch with him, and he'd just be gone. Like, nobody would know who he was for days at a time. So it's kind of...
That's on him.
It actually shed some light as to, like, oh, like, I guess it wasn't just, like, casually... Like, he was on a lot of stuff.
Yeah. He was fucking up.
The only toxic part of her was that, like, after they broke up, she was with Pete Davidson, like, within, like, 2 weeks, which is, like, come on.
Dude, when was the last time you heard Pete Davidson's name?
It's been a minute.
What happened to Pete Davidson? Not that I'm necessarily clamoring for him to come back, but he was like the it guy all year last year, and then suddenly he's just vanished.
I mean, he's on the Mount Rushmore of like girls that he's dated, and based on how he looks, and not that I'm one to talk by
all time overachiever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Also, I feel like I don't know if Pete Davidson would be a really fun hang or a really shit hang.
I think it'd be fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell, but I think. Yeah, I don't know. I could see that going like two ways, and there's no in between.
Well, I think he's funny and he likes the party, which is always a great combination.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh man! All right, plug the name of the book, and then we'll get on with getting on.
Yeah, I think it's just Mac Miller, some tagline about most dope or whatever. I don't know, but if you search Mac Miller biography, it'll be the first one that comes up.
Cool. All righty. If nothing else, then Vance Joy.
Yeah, let's do it.
Vance Joy. What is his name? His name, I got it up here. It is Vance Joy's stage name, James Gabriel Keough, or Co, or I don't know. These fucking Brits do all sorts of shit.
Well, so he's he actually grew up, he was playing Aussie Rules football.
Yeah.
Which is I would not have pegged him for.
No, he doesn't necessarily strike you as like a football player.
No, so this is back in 2008, 2009. He played for like a... you know, like the football equivalent to like Double A or, you know, whatever.
Right, minor leagues.
Yeah, minor leagues. And, you know, he said he enjoyed it a lot, but it was just, he was like, yeah, I'm not going to be like a big shot pro or anything, and I like music, so I'm going to go in that direction. But kind of funny.
Yeah, just out of nowhere. He played defense. What? I guess I could see him like maybe cornerback. That's about it.
Well, it's funny. Outside of John Mayer, I think his music is probably this, and I'm gonna use this adjective loosely, but just softest, like lovey
covered,
lovey dovey, like softer music. Yeah.
Let me take a quick look.
I mean, the only other group that would come to mind would be The Fray, but I think Vance Joy takes the cake because all his songs are like love songs.
Yeah, so this gets into a question that I was curious about as I was thinking about it over the week. Like, and this is probably my biggest criticism of pop or like soft rock. The music is, and I'm generalizing here because it's not all the music, and I think actually Vance Joy does a great job of kind of breaking the, he's maybe the exception to what I'm calling the rule here, but soft rock is generally not so complex. There's not much to it. It heavily relies on the vocalist or vocalists, you know. And so as I listen through a Vance Joy and a John Mayer and The Fray and a George Ezra, like it becomes a bit difficult for me to differentiate between the lines. Aside, like, obviously you can tell the vocals apart from each other, but the music itself is fairly generic amongst one another. And I don't know, does that not get tiresome a little bit?
It does. It does, for sure. Like, I think it also gets tiresome, too, in particular with Vance Joy, where it's like, there has to be something else in your life other than, like, hanging out with a girl or being in love with a girl a couple on TV that inspired you to write a love song. Like, there has to be something else in your life that you can write about, you would think.
Yeah, you know, like, if this is your lane, then fine, so be it, but you've cornered yourself. Like, we're three albums in now, and I guess, you know, there's plenty of time. He's still a young artist. He can do whatever he wants. But you've kind of put yourself in a box at this point that would seem strange to break out from, given you have, like, one or two songs that break from the norm.
It's akin to Matthew McConaughey when he first started as an actor. He would only get spots in rom-coms.
I've heard the same thing about Denzel playing the same character in every movie he's in.
Well, yeah, and for longest times, McConaughey had to hold out for, like, years until he got opportunities to do stuff outside of that. But anyway.
Do you think Leo kind of plays the same character in all his movies? I've heard this. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but I've heard this.
I mean, so, like, what's a character? Because there's, like,
so, Wolf of Wall Street, Django.
Gatsby.
Inception.
Yeah. He did Frank Abagnale. Romeo and Juliet. Catch Me If You Can. He did, there's a movie he did about Blood Diamonds, too. I can't remember the name of it. In the early 2000s. That one's different.
What's that movie where he's out in the wilderness? He's getting chased by a bear. The Revenant.
I don't know
if I necessarily agree with that take. Because just the movies we listed there, there's a great diversity of characters.
Yeah.
But I have heard people say that he kind of plays like a slightly dumb, but like wants to be powerful type of man.
See, I don't know. I would disagree with that. With even just thinking with Inception, like, he's not slightly dumb in that movie.
No, he actually plays a smart guy.
Oh, you know what other movie, Leo movie is fantastic? Is Shutter Island.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Oh, dude, it's a must watch.
Okay.
That's a totally different character. Actually, phenomenal acting.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci's in that as well.
Okay, I bet.
Or no, sorry, Mark Ruffalo. Yeah. I always confuse the two.
What? What?
I don't know. Anyway, that's a fantastic movie.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
But yeah, going back to Vance Joy, like, I don't know. By the time I got to the third album, it was kind of
tired.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay, rinse and repeat, love song. It's like, dude, like, do you ever go through hardships?
I ran out of adjectives to newly describe
same.
Music.
Same.
And that's not to say it's bad, right? So what I said about him kind of breaking that mold a little bit is you will hear a symphony of different sounds throughout. It's not wild, but, like, he'll add in horns. He'll add in, you know, background vocalist. He'll change the drums up a little bit, you know, all sorts of different percussion. Actually, that's probably the best part, in my opinion, is, like, whoever's on drums for this guy is killing it, because you do hear a lot of cool different drum stuff. You know, on the third album, you hear more of the kind of, like, synth drums, which is, it's different, but it still, like, does the job. and I think they mix it up well. There are some songs that are definitely very just like simple, thumpy bass drum kick. But there's a lot of other songs where they mix it up really cool. And that's one of the things I most enjoyed about the listen. But yeah, it's just the same song over and over through the middle of these albums.
Yeah.
So that's going to be my greatest criticism of today.
Same.
But I still enjoyed the listen. So unless and you, yeah.
I was just going to say, and you kind of mentioned it, but there's still time for him to mix it up and try different sounds. But it just seems like he's not ready to do that right now.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see him, like, bring in an electric guitar now and then.
Just turn into John Mayer. His hair gets a little bit longer. He becomes a little bit more douchier.
Starts dating, like who would be, like, Sabrina Carpenter?
Yeah, whatever 20-year-old Disney Channel star. That would be the John Mayer playbook.
Oh, man. Oh, fuck. All right. I don't have anything else, so if you want to get into it, let's go.
Yeah, so debut album, Dream Your Life Away, 2014. And he did have, like, a quick EP where a lot of those songs show up on the album, so we're not going to get into that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it opens with Winds of Change, which I thought was a good opener, song about lost love, and I'm just laughing because,
you're going to say this over and over and over. Yeah, and it's you make the point for me. This is, like, the most stereotypical Vance Joy song of all time, and you get it at track one, album one. It's up-tempo, strummy acoustic with, like, soft horns and drums, working kind of in his middle-upper range. It's very bright, very, like, easy, accessible listen. As an opener, I wasn't thrilled, but I thought it was fine. Like, it's nice in the sense that it lets the listener know what you're getting.
Yeah, and I thought it was a decent song. This was actually the first song that he ever wrote that he thought was any good. He wrote this one back in 2009, so several years prior.
Okay, yeah, so he's been sitting on this, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, this is just pretty generic, you know. I watch the grass on the back lawn grow, and I will not allow the winds of change to blow, and I hope you decide to come back home. And there's lots more of that throughout the catalog.
Yep. All right, next one up here, Mess Is Mine. And this is an interesting thing, because my first note is foot stomping, but it is kind of like a sad ballad. Like, and that's what I was talking about with this kick drum. You get the kick drum that's just kind of thumping along. And so you kind of, like, if you didn't know any better, you'd want to, like, stomp your foot on a wood, like, concert hall floor and get along to this one. But it's not that kind of track either. I love what the drums do here. I think it really thickens up the song, gives it some musical depth. Mixed in with these, like, sorrowful, like, really deep vocals. Not really deep, but, like, deep for him. You feel the emotion coming off the mic, and I think this is one of his better ballads, for sure.
Oh, totally agree. This is definitely a standout track, and it's kind of a different way of saying you love someone, where you're saying your mess is mine, like,
right.
Whatever your problems are, right. I'm going to take them on, too.
For better
which
or worse type deal.
Yeah, it's a cool way of mixing up the generic, you know, I love you and yada, yada, yada. Kind of gave me a little bit of a Lumineers vibe, which that would be the other soft rock group that we kind of covered, although I would argue they're maybe a little bit more indie folk. But
yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely one of the standouts.
Yeah, agreed. Next one, Wasted Time. And if the last one was sad for you, leave the next one, because this is even sadder. It's just all the happiness is just drained from his voice here. You hear it full of regret, just so, like, drippy and kind of raspy. Shuffly quick drum pattern with this low, slow violin to even, like, deepen the sadness. As it goes, he kind of raises his level on the mic as the emotion kind of pours out of him. And I do like that. It accentuates this, like, loss of love, this breakup, this heartbreak. And I think this is a really nice one, too.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's a loss of love where the love was just based on physical attractiveness. Kind of talks about some of his own insecurities or the protagonist's insecurities of being with someone you think is, on a pedestal above you.
But right.
Yeah, not as good as the first two songs on the album, and certainly not as good as the next couple songs.
Agreed.
Which the next song I think is one of his biggest, if not his biggest songs to date.
Yeah, top three by numbers for sure.
Yeah, Riptide.
Yeah, this is House of Gold by 21 Pilots, which is a hilarious, actually. I don't know why I even brought that up as a, like, the ukulele comp for this song, but
oh, well, yeah, we
like,
haven't
I could
covered
have named, I could have gone like what's that Hawaiian song?
I don't know.
It'll come to me. With the big fat Hawaiian guy, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't know the name. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Anyways. But yeah, this is just a really fun ukulele hand drum track. That's all this is. Fairly simple, but like it's up-tempo, it's fun, it's bright, it's super like easy to listen to and sing along with. Mixing in the hand cymbals in the chorus, like, you can see Vance on stage just kind of like pounding the hand cymbals on himself. Like, it's just a really, like, I don't find a ton of depth in the lyrics here, but I did find just a ton of fun on this track.
Yeah, the song actually took him more than 4 years to write. So he started writing it in 2008 and then didn't finish until 2012. And just kind of worked on it in different bits and pieces throughout the years. But no, it's cool. To me, this song's more of like a collection of thoughts than like one concrete idea.
So I had read this was kind of loosely based off vacations he used to take as a child where they'd go to this Riptide hotel.
Yeah.
And so he's just kind of telling, whether or not they're 100% accurate, he's just telling stories from, like, being a child, you know, being on vacation, being down by the beach, and, like, having fun.
Well, yeah, and then he closes out the chorus with, I love you when you're singing that song, and I got a lump in my throat because you're going to sing the words wrong, which is just, like, a quick anecdote about love.
That's a funny line, too, because right at the end, he kind of, like, his voice kind of cracks on that very last word. You're going to sing the words wrong. it's a hilarious, cause he's so like secure and fun sounding throughout the song that all of a sudden he like drips off. He's like, oh fuck.
That's funny. That's probably one of the most relatable lyrics is like, you know, your significant other partner, like singing along to song and messing up the lyrics. Yeah. Like my wife will do that from time to time. And sometimes I'll like say, actually, no, he says this. And other times I just let it go. So it's, I don't know. It's kind of funny.
I almost never correct anybody on it, dude. I hate being the guy that's like, actually,
well, it depends what she's singing.
Yeah.
Like if it's like, I don't know, if it's like something like absurd, I'd be like, well, actually, like he's not, you know, he's not saying.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, one of the biggest hits, I would say of two off this album. Riptide. Absolutely check it out. Next one, Who Am I? This is another fun, strummy kind of acoustic guitar track. Fairly simple drums and fairly simple chord structure. But the vocals, and what I like about this album in particular that I think you lose on the third album is the vocals are so raw and real.
Mm.
Like, he's not really fucking with it too much. He's doing him. And that's not to say I don't enjoy when other artists, you know, twist their vocals and add, you know, tuners to their vocals. But if this is the lane you want to go, and especially in soft rock, I think this is important to have that, like, that realness to it. And that's what you get here.
Yeah, and he's got a great vocal range too.
He doesn't
necessarily let it go all the time, but when he does, it's awesome.
Yeah, he can do a lot of things with his voice. You know, it doesn't go super super high, but I do like his low range is fantastic. You know, sometimes there's songs, not necessarily this song in particular, but there's songs where he kind of gets stuck up in this like high falsetto for most of the song. A bit Riptide is a bit like that. It's not quite all the way, but it is a bit like that. And that's what I'm like, all right, dude, like, mix it up a little bit. But, yes, to illustrate the point, he does have that range for sure.
Definitely. And, yeah, this song, Who Am I, is basically saying, like, you know, you question your own identity when a relationship's not going right. And you're like, oh, where does my identity begin and the relationship identity end? So, nothing crazy.
I never thought about it like that. Yeah. You really, like, after a while, you start to identify as a pair rather than as your own, like, personal identity.
And some people more than others.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure that's the cause of a lot of heartache across the world. But
yeah, I mean, when you lose, I mean, we know people, one person in particular comes to mind, people that get in a relationship and then they lose their own hobbies and whatnot, or maybe they keep some of them, but they don't have that time for themselves. Like, they're like, oh, what? It's just me and my partner, 24/7, 365.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of another person that's the exact opposite that we both know that is very much in a relationship, but also is very much, like, independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get both ends.
Yeah, it's interesting. Alrighty, next one, From Afar. I thought afar was two words.
I did, too.
I looked at it, I was like, what the fuck is this? But, yeah, I mean, it don't matter, really. This is a simple, slower track, lower energy in all facets of the song. You know, you get a little bit of life as the song goes on the mic, but this one didn't really hit for me.
No, it's just not as musically catchy as the last couple tracks. And Vance Joy said on this one, you know, this is about having someone that you can't have someone because they're just out of reach. Maybe they're seeing someone else, or maybe you're seeing someone. When I was faced with that, I decided to write a song to let it all out and be free, and that was this song. But yeah, it's just all right.
Yeah, nothing crazy here. If you're listening all the way through, not necessarily a skip, but not something you, like, turn your head for.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Next one, We All Die Trying to Get It Right. this is almost kind of like a druggy song. Like, I could see myself, like after a couple hits, kind of leaning back and be like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, dude. The name of the song, We All Die Trying to Get It Right.
But it's just got that, it's got the music and everything, right? He's got these very airy vocals to himself. You know, up-tempo strummy acoustic, but then you get this, like, these light hovering horns that come in and out, fade up and down, pounding, traveling drums. It also struck me as, like, a rom-com song where, like, at the end of the rom-com, the guy's been chasing this girl for the whole movie, and he, like, just every time something, he's, like, close, it fucks up, something happens, and he finally gets the kiss at the end of the movie, and this song starts playing.
Yeah. It's funny he got the inspiration for this from a... watching the movie Infamous about American writer Truman Capote.
So that was Truman Capote.
Capote, yes. Yeah.
I think it's Capote. I don't know. I think he wrote Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, so he basically just ripped off a line from the movie for the song title, which isn't really ripping off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good with that. Unless you got anything else, the next one is the other hit on this album, Georgia.
Yeah.
Dude. If you want to go head-to-head between Georgia and Riptide on this album, it's a day-by-day thing for me. Both of these songs are so powerful. But Georgia in particular is this, like, slow, powerful kind of pop rock love song. I almost, like...
It's almost like a lullaby.
Yeah. And if it had picked up a little bit more, it would almost be like an anthem.
Mm.
Like, if it filled out and really crescendoed, it would be very anthem-y to me. But I fucking love this song. Simple, plucky acoustic, clear, full vocals. As the song goes on, like, again, the music is what it is. It's loud, it's proud, but it's not, like, in your face. But as the song goes on, it struck me that, like, the vocals somehow, like, started moving more and more to the front. And I don't even think he picks up his levels so much as it just feels like the music fades a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not a ton. You still, like, hear it. But it just feels like he comes to the forefront as, like, the emotion builds in this track. And it's such maybe I'm just making that up, but it's such a cool, like, fucking feeling when you're listening to this song. And he doesn't really do anything crazy with it. Like, he stays in his mid range, but he just works that range masterfully, man. And yeah, this song rocks.
Yeah, there's something about it that's really just calming.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's comforting.
Yeah, comforting too. Yeah, and the song's about a girl who, you know, drives him crazy, but it's like she can pull me back with just one touch or one kiss or anything along those lines.
Right.
And yeah, the chorus, which is super catchy. I could easily lose my mind. The way you kiss me will work each time. Calling me to come back to bed, singing Georgia on my mind, which Georgia on my mind is actually a song I commented.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So he kind of played off that.
Let's see. Oh, I don't know how to read my own comments on GDocs from here.
Georgia on my mind.
Let's see.
Shorthand a little tough there.
Okay, I did have it right. I wanted to look it up before I said it, but it's a Ray Charles song from the 60s.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was where he got the inspiration for that long.
Another jazz master that we will... If we do a jazz episode, I don't know... Because there's so much on each of these different artists, right? Whether it's Dean, whether it's Ray Charles, whether it's, Sinatra. Like, there is so much fucking music. We may have to tackle that in a different way than we tackle some of these other artists.
That might have to be, like, a greatest hits format or something.
Yeah, something like that. I've thought about that with a couple other artists because there's just so much. And, like, there's a lot to unpack story-wise, too. But, yeah, that'll be interesting for sure. That's cool this comes from that.
Yeah, definitely. This and Riptide, also, you know, my two favorite songs on the album.
Head to head, for sure.
I do. I really like the next song too. It's kind of another calming, relaxing song. Red Eye.
Yeah, I thought this was a really nice deep cut. This one's a little bit more anthem-y. you get these like simple drums and kind of hand cymbals and keyboard and violin filling out the sound as the song goes on. I got like a bit Goo Goo Dolls kind of vibe here. A bit
Iris
Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's got this, and in a similar vein, like he's got this almost conversational verse. You know, verse. It's borderline conversational. And then he brings it up into the higher sweet sound in the chorus, which is very like classic Vance Joy. I really like this one too.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this one. Lyrically, this is a tale as old as time. You know, a guy doesn't know where he stands with the girl, so he's going home. In this case, he's flying on the red eye, but you know, he's going home to see where he stands with the girl that he loves. So yeah. It's a tale that goes back thousands of years.
Right, the red eye, mate.
And then my other note here was, and this is just a note in general, where Vance Joy is like a less douchey indie John Mayer.
I don't have anything to add to that, but I see the comp for sure. All right. Next one, First Time. It's kind of a hard-hitting breakup song here. Quick, shuffly track with thick kick drum kind of driving the song. You get these weird, like, strange for him because usually he sounds so confident, so sure of himself on the mic, whereas here you hear that, like, nervous kind of wobble in his voice on the mic a little bit. It shows this, like, sense of vulnerability. You know, musically, I don't think this is anything crazy, but I did enjoy it. Really nice deep cut.
Yeah, so this is a personal one to him. It's actually about losing his virginity.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, I picked up on it as I went, but I was like, this could be a lot of things.
First time always cuts the deepest, doesn't it, Joe?
It sure fucking does. Sure fucking does.
Yeah, it's all right. I probably not one I'd come back to, but, you know, it's cool that it's a little bit more personal to him than some of the songs that he gets inspirations from movies and stuff from.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, next one, All I Ever Wanted. This one struck me as, like, very 2000s pop rock to me. Very One Republic, let's say. acoustic riff, but, like, brings in this cool poppy electric on the chorus. Or maybe it's not even electric. Maybe it's just acoustic kind of, like, boosted a little bit. But, again, still fairly simple music. They're really leaning on, like, accentuating the high points of his vocals, the high points of the music at the same time. Gets up in a very high range and level on the mic here. Like, this is him kind of throwing it all at the wall. It's not at all, like, in line with the rest of the album, but it's a cool, like, mix.
Yeah, this is one of the ones for me where it's, like, in the right mood, I enjoy this song. You comped it to One Republic. They're a group that actually, they changed up their sound a little bit. That might be a fun one to do at some point.
I've thought about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he has a line in the song where he talks about getting holy water in his eyes.
Yeah.
Got the inspiration for that from a movie where a baby gets christened and the holy water gets in the baby's eyes and the baby starts crying.
Isn't that every time?
I guess.
You know what's wild is, like, I'm Catholic, but, like, in the Catholic Church, usually they just kind of, like, dump a little, like handful of water on you. There are churches, like, Eastern Orthodox churches where they fucking, like, dunk you.
They drown you.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Bro, the funniest picture, I'll see this, like, probably once every month or so. Someone will be like, this was the craziest time. And it's the picture of the priest shooting the baby from, like, 6 feet away with a COVID mask on. Like, to... He's in one of the squirt gun to the holy water.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It took a second.
The priest is with the mask on. He's got one of those, like, dollar store squirt guns, like the green and yellow and orange, and he's sniping the baby from 6 feet away.
Lord bless the super soaker. Oh, man.
But, yeah, he also has a line in the song where it's, and all I ever wanted was time. You know that all I ever wanted was time, and that's that one's always relatable for me. It always comes back to time, but even though it's, yeah.
Time, man. What a concept. Is time even real?
Oh, it's real. It's not enough of it.
All righty. Next one. Best That I Can. this is the first point on this album where I was like, all right, enough of this shit. I grew tired at this point.
Well, this one, I felt the same way, but for a different reason. This is like a song for the simps, like being frustrated when you're giving it your all in a relationship and you're not getting what you want out of it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, lyrically, I don't connect with this one at all.
Yeah, and musically, it's just kind of lackluster is a word I will use a few times today, and this is one that struck me there.
And you know why? He wrote this a week before they turned the album in to get another track on the album. So
it is crazy when an artist, like we talked about Taylor Swift doing it, where like they get in the studio 2 days before the album is like completed, and they fucking crank out a hit. it's got to be fucking impossible, dude. And, like, if you're doing it that late in the process, like, where has this been the whole time, you know?
Dude, it'd be funny to go – or not funny. It'd be interesting to go and see the songs that people turn in, like, a week – that they started, like, a week before and compare, like, the duds to hit ratio.
That would be an impossible, like, project.
I know.
But, yeah, that would be fascinating.
That would be one where if we ever had, like, some – if we interviewed someone, like, an artist, and we're like, hey, what, you know, what – what'd you turn in?
Yeah, what works best in your process?
Yeah,
for sure. All righty, next one, my kind of man. yeah, this one didn't do it for me either. Again, tired.
Yeah. Lyrically, it's told from a third-person perspective, describing the type of person the songwriter Vance Joy strives to be. This is a skip for me.
Yeah, slow, soft love song, plucky acoustic, piano mixed in with, like, soft, sweet vocals, just meh.
Yeah.
I think the last two do better. He closes it out nicely, in my opinion. Next one, Fire in the Flood.
Yeah, so this is the third biggest song on the album in terms of streams. It says 220 million, so another hit off the album.
Yeah, I kind of like this one. It gives me campfire vibes, especially in the beginning as it opens. It's a little bit simpler, but it's a little bit too complex for that because, like, it builds up with the from the guitar to then hand cymbals to then horns and then the vocals bumping. And all of a sudden, you got this very full song in the chorus. But as it starts, it's very campfire-y to me, the way the drums are moving and whatnot. And, you know, it's good tempo, good energy here. I very fun, very easy listening. Especially after a couple duds, it's, like, nice to have this as we close the album.
Yeah, so lyrically, this is a weird one. So it's – there's a couple lines in the beginning that are basically, like, stalker kind of lines where he's singing, I was only walking through your neighborhood, saw your light on, honey, in the cold I stood. Anywhere I go, there you are. And then the rest of the song is kind of more akin to, like, a regular standard love song. But Vance Joy said on this song for the lyrics – I had a recurring image in my head of a guy walking in the neighborhood where his ex-girlfriend lives. He's, you know, hunting down the places they used to go together. He has a time on his hands and feels kind of useless. He thinks that when they're back together, he'll be at peace again. So it's like a stalker kind of song.
Yeah, I hear that. But it could be just playing a character. It sounds like he takes a lot of inspiration from things that aren't necessarily personal to him. So,
yeah,
you know, could be one of those stories type deal.
Yeah, definitely. It was just a little bit...
It's strange, for sure. It strikes.
It's just different from the rest of the stuff on the album.
Yeah, 100%.
But no, I do like this one. It's definitely...
Cool. It's a cool song late in the album.
Yeah. And then the last track's actually a bonus track.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So this is Straight Into Your Arms. I like it, kind of, a little bit. It's growing on me. It's not my favorite, but... It's like it doesn't fit on the album at all.
No, it's more like a lo-fi, hip-hoppy kind of
sound.
It's definitely...
Yeah, you get this like pop drum and keyboard thing with choppy acoustic and this like kind of self-amusing like whistle you would just have as you're like walking down the street or something that plays throughout. And I don't know, there's good parts and bad parts of this song. It's grown on me to the point where like I would listen to it again, but like it's certainly not my favorite.
Yeah, I actually wish he would experiment a little bit more with different sounds akin to this.
So I think he does on the third album. As we get into it, we'll talk about it. But I think he gets a little poppier, a little bit more lo-fi on that album, for sure.
But yeah, good debut album. There's some mega hits off the album, some decent tracks, some, you know, average tracks, and then a couple misses. But
yeah, I mean, in my limited experience in this kind of field genre, I would say this is one of the better contemporary albums that you've got.
Yeah,
in that area. If you're interested in like soft rock, this is certainly I don't want to put a number on it, but this is certainly an album you've listened to over and over again because of the hits.
Yeah, hits. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it's a good album.
Georgia Riptide for sure.
So the next album comes out in 2018. The album title is Nation of Two, which John Mayer is so upset that he did not come up with that album.
100%. And the album cover, it's just a very minimalistic drawing of people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very John Mayer.
For sure.
Yeah. And it even sounds a little bit like middle of the catalog John Mayer. Not super country, but there are moments. He starts like adding in country elements to some of these songs. I'm not saying any of these are country songs necessarily, But there are country elements where, like, banjo starts coming along. Even the drum patterns are a bit, like, soft country. And so he's mixed it up slightly. It's still very akin to the last album, I would say. But he's mixing it up. And again, what I said about the depth of sounds, like, this is part of it. And it's cool that at least he does that.
Yeah, and I like this album a lot, too.
I do, too. All right, so let's get into it. First track, Call If You Need Me. Low, kind of plucky, almost country-sounding guitar. Very simply musically, but you get that country twang in the beginning. First verse is low and deep, and then the kind of rest of the song picks up into a mid-high range. I don't know. I don't mind this song, but I find it a lackluster opening. Like, I wish he had gone with something maybe a little bit more. Like, if he had switched the first and the second track, honestly, I think I'd be a little happier.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It's a decent track, but it's not one that I'm going to come back to.
Yeah, that's how I feel, too. And maybe I am biased. It's like, you get into the album, and this is the first song you hear. But I don't know. It's just, it didn't, like, grab my interest.
Yeah, he did play on this one. He said a guitar-lele, which is like a mini guitar, like a mix of a guitar and a ukulele.
Okay.
And then he also said on this track he really liked the line about, like, part of the inspiration for the song was the line about talking to someone through the glass when they're taking a shower. Which,
gotcha.
You know, super lovey-dovey.
That's a relatable thing, though, I think.
I guess.
I don't know.
I don't want to be bothered when I'm taking a shower.
I don't either, but I think there are people, especially when you're in that lovey-dovey phase, that are like, they want to just stand at the door and talk to you as you're, like, fucking around in there, you know?
Dude, one of my biggest pet peeves is if someone, namely my wife, tries to talk to me when I'm taking a poop.
Who else would be doing this?
I mean, that's pretty much it.
Is Jake, like, trying
he's
trying to break down Hollywood Undead as you're, like, going through the motions?
No, but, dude, poop time is sacred time. Don't be talking to me when I'm taking a poop.
That's like, you ever seen that Rick and Morty episode where Rick builds a toilet in a different dimension? And there's a guy that, like, he builds it so far away so that nobody would ever use it.
And
the one guy finds it and starts using it.
Yeah, that was funny.
Great episode. But, yeah, that kind of hits the point there. Anyways.
Yeah.
Again, wild, like, transition there. But back to Vance Joy. God, we do that a lot. Anyways. Next one, Lay It On Me. Again.
Whoops.
This is one of the hits off the album. And I like this a lot more. Full, kind of energetic, loved song. You hear the vocals, and it's very, like, calling out to the woman he loves. Simple, thumpy acoustic, kind of getting boosted with quick, shuffly drums and, like, these blasting, fun horns. Vibe here is great. This would have been a great opener. Great song.
Yeah, this was the lead single off the album. Did well with streams, 162 million. He said on this one he had a guitar riff, like, the guitar riff for the song for, like, years, and ended up pairing it with, like, a random lyric that he had in his phone. Everything starts at your skin, and then the rest of the song kind of came together from that. And when I was doing research for this, it sounds like his creative process is a lot like, you know, he'll have, like, different riffs. He's got all these, like, random, like, lines and things that he's inspired by in his phone, and he just kind of, like,
picks and chooses.
Yeah, and a lot of his inspiration comes from, similar to Taylor Swift, where it's not necessarily something that has happened to him, but something that he sees, like, whether it's on a movie or walking down the street or whatever.
Very observational.
Yeah. Or almost a bit like Mark Knopfler, but just better.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's an interesting, like, songwriting style, you know? Like, there are some people who are very much entrenched in, like, this is my personal experience. And to have the very opposite of that being, I mean, almost the very opposite being Vance Joy of, like, you know, there's some personal tracks in here, but the vast majority of it is taken from some third person's perspective. It's an interesting thing, because I remember you mentioning that you're not necessarily a fan of these fictitious kind of fake stories, but this isn't really that.
No.
This is some kind of, like, blend in the middle where it's like, this happened, just not to me.
I think it's different, too, where it's like, if you didn't know, like, dig into the lyrics, you would just think it happened to him. Whereas, like, when the Freyr singing about a boxer going to put on, you know, like, his gloves, it's so over the top and different.
And to the casual listener, it's indistinguishable regardless. But, you know, as you're digging into an artist that you might really like, as you're trying to, like, oh, yeah, I like Vance Joy, let me listen a little bit more. It is strange to discover that, like, oh, this is like a movie kind of thing. Or, you know, I was at a bar one night and,
yeah,
it's weird. Anyways, really good track here. Next one, We're Going Home. This is another good, fun, choppy love song. Light poppy guitar mixing in with claps, horns, crashy drums, vocals mostly in his higher range. I really like this one, too. It's not a hit off the album, but it's a good deep cut.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites off the album. He actually wrote this when he was on tour opening for Taylor Swift.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, I read that somewhere. That's cool.
Yeah, and the song itself is kind of about stepping into the unknown and, you know, figuring out who you are and just kind of life journey kind of vibe.
Which, yeah, I dig it.
Which he said he did a lot of on that tour, which, okay. Yeah, I mean, you're opening for Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Is
that, like, the best job of all time? Is that, like, being the backup quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to go out there every night and do your job, but the crowd is so, like, buzzed up already that it doesn't really matter. As long as you don't, like, fuck up royally, like, you're good.
Yeah, that's true, because nobody – if there's a hundred,
nobody's there for you.
There's 100,000 people in the stands, maybe 1,000 or less, or probably maybe 500 or less are
right.
Like specifically there for you.
Right. So, you know, if you do good, you're not going to get like overwhelming praise, but most of the time, again, as long as you don't fuck up royally, like you're in a good place.
Yeah.
And it's probably fun as hell, especially now.
Yeah, definitely. I think when my wife saw her last year, Girl in Red opened for her, which is, she's got some good songs, but I don't know a lot of her stuff.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I like the line too in the chorus when he sings, "When I see your light shine, I know I'm home."
Yeah.
But yeah, his great vocals, catchy song, definitely a standout from the album. One of my favorites of his whole catalog.
Yeah, I like this one a lot too.
Same with the next one. I love this song, Saturday Sun.
Yeah, and this might be, I don't know by the numbers, but it's one of the biggest hits off this album for sure.
Yeah, 315 million on Spotify.
It's got some good numbers. What does that cash out to, like $50? It's kind of like an up-tempo, bumpy, poppy track. My comp here is Train, if you're familiar with that line of work. Very, like, fun, kind of folky rock, like, pop thing.
Well, yeah, and the ukulele's prominent on this one.
Yeah, you hear that throughout. Full sound with the band. Background singers boosting the last lines of this chorus to, like, really amp it up. This struck me as, like, a great poolside listen.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he wrote this about meeting someone and really great and not, like, wanting to miss out on the chance of seeing them again. And you can kind of hear, like, the yearning in his vocals when he's singing. He's, "Oh, Saturday Sun, I met someone out on the West Coast. So I got to get back. I can't let this go." Just one of those, like, you know, you're on vacation or whatever. You meet someone. You have a great time. And just, like, thinking back and, like, the yearning on that time. And
yeah.
Again, another tale as old as time. But
tale as old as time.
Told beautifully.
Yep, love it. What's the West Coast? It would be...
California?
No, oh, well, I was thinking of Australia. There's really nothing on the West Coast of Australia as far as I know. You ever looked at a map? Dude, like, it's kind of like Canada, where, like, the vast majority of the population lives in that southeast coast, and then the rest of the country is, like, a fucking desert that nobody inhabits, because it's just, like, uninhabitable.
Nah,
it's fucking crazy, dude. Like, the vast, vast majority of Australia is uninhabited. It's just wild, like... safari, basically, which is kind of interesting, but
yeah, that'd be a interesting strange. Vacation spot.
What, like Australia in general?
Yeah.
Or like,
yeah,
I mean, it's big too, like you don't realize how big it is. It's fucking huge. But yeah, anyways, never been. Well, would like to go. It is nice when you go on vacation, you don't have to worry about like another language being spoken. Like, it's English.
Yeah,
kind of fucked up English, but you know. That's another thing interesting. It was like, you don't really hear that coming out of his voice. If he didn't know any better, you'd be like, I don't know, this guy's probably from, like, fucking San Diego.
I don't know where he was born, so I don't know, like, his early...
I think he was born in Ireland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But lived most of his life in Australia.
Yeah, he doesn't really have any accent.
No, at least on the vocals, it doesn't strike me.
No.
Yeah, there's no, you know, good day, mate type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, anyways, back to it. Next, Take Your Time. Settles down here a little bit. We've had some fun tracks in the last few. We're settling down here. And this is an interesting thing he does, because, like, the beat is still quick. The drums are moving. The guitar is kind of, like, quietly plucking along. But it's still simpler, slower. Like, so it's not, like, actually slower. It just feels slower, softer, easier. You know, get these claps kind of going on in the back with the drums that, like, really back up these powerful, pleading vocals. And I kind of like it as, like, a cool take on a love song. Like, it's an interesting analogy here, too.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really like the line, "There's an ocean inside my head, waves that don't ever rest." And the song is just about wanting someone to give you a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not as good as the last couple songs, but it's still good.
Yeah, 100%.
Next up is I'm With You, which is a sweeter love song. It's another good one, like, in the right mood. It's a really good song.
Yeah, that's it. I said cool, but not much replay value. You know, vocals stuck kind of mostly in a mid-level. Nothing crazy musically. So.
Yeah, and the song's just about a day he spent with a girl on the coast of Australia.
Yeah, cool.
But another great one-liner, I was just coasting till we met. Although I'm sure that's probably been used before, but I like the line nonetheless.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Next one, Like Gold. This is, dude, you know what I heard when I heard this was like Zeppelin 3.
I'll have to go back and listen to it again.
It's
with
very
that in mind.
Folky, plucky guitar. It's not that quick. Like, when you think of Bron Iyer, like, it's not that fast. But if you slowed it down a little bit and then put Vance Joy on the track, like, I hear it. Anyways, you get the simple hand percussion. Sounds like you got another vocalist to help, another male vocalist to, like, kind of boost the level here. Sometimes that works. I think here it's all right. It doesn't strike me as bad or good. It just is. What I don't love about this song is this weird, like, kind of flowy cadence on the...
Oh, I like that cadence in the chorus.
Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't hit for me. Like, my note here is stick to your fastball, you know? I wasn't a huge fan of this song, but it's not, like, horrible.
Yeah, it's funny. I like the way he cadences the chorus with the gold when you see me. Hi, if you need me. Babe, that's the way it is. Or that's the way it was. That's the history. It's not one of his top tracks, but I did like it.
I could see that for sure. It's one of those where I was like, it's not for me, but I guess somebody probably likes this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Next one, Alone With Me, another quieter love song. Yeah, again, just very simple pounding drums and kind of like traveling acoustic guitar. This is where I get tired again on the album. This one just wasn't for me.
Yeah, it's when it's nothing crazy musically and it's just lyrically the same old love song, which I feel like this is very much in that vein. When I was going through and doing the notes for this too, this song and a lot of his songs in general, he wrote like in a hotel room after doing a show, which is what it is. But yeah, this is just another like standard Vance Joy love song.
Right, right. Nothing crazy. So this next one struck me as like, now I've seen a few of these. Crashing Into You. Is this not the same title as, like, a Dave Matthews, like, hit?
Yeah.
He has a few of these where he takes, and I guess it's not a super unique title anyways, but there's been a few songs where it's the same title as other, like, hits from random-ass artists. And I'm like, what are you doing here, Vance?
I mean, dude, there's only...
I know there's only so many ways you can arrange words in the English language, but, like...
Well, especially if when you write all your stuff is about love songs.
Yeah, yeah, he's, again, cornered himself.
Yeah.
Anyways... Fuller, more energetic sound here, but kind of slow and easy going. Lots of harmonizing with like the background singers on this one, which I think is nice. It's fairly simple, but it's one of those I'd like turn on and kind of just bop my head to casually.
Yeah, not as memorable as some of the others. It's another one he wrote after a show in a hotel room. And then my other note on here was, I feel like you could take some of the standard Vance Joy lyrics and put it in like a straight pop song and it would probably work, although, you know, his current style is working for him and it's successful, but I think
you're
100%
right.
Yeah,
it falls very much in line with that. Like, if the pop producers, the pop songwriters, like, were doing this, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah.
Although I do know on this album in particular, he had hired a couple of other artists to like help him write, so that might be part of it too. The artists, I can't remember their names now. Maybe I'll pull it up here in a second. But it didn't surprise me as I was reading through this. Like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, it makes sense for him to go out and, like, as you're starting a second project trying to differentiate yourself, get a couple people to help.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, as we go, maybe I'll find it, but maybe I won't. Anyways, next track. One of These Days by the Foo Fighters. Simple strummy acoustic on the verses, kind of this is where you get the banjo, accentuated with banjo and horns. Vocals kind of in a mid-high level. It's fairly poppy, but like also fairly nuanced. There's a lot going on. This is kind of what I like out of Vance Joy, where you get a lot of the different sounds as the song goes on. This is one of my favorite deep cuts off this album.
Yeah, I like this one. I like that it's a little bit different musically, and lyrically, this is in the vein of being in a relationship or having potential in a relationship and one person's trying to figure life out and, it, you know, just wrong timeline for it to work. But this is a good track.
Yeah, 100%.
The next one is Little Boy. I'm very undecided on this one. Like, I can't decide if I hate it or if I like it.
I'm leaning towards liking it. Again, you got the banjo here punching it up a little bit over this, like, simple, low plucking guitar and these, like, comforting, strong, like, solid vocals. Background vocalist coming in and harmonizing again as the song goes on. Again, it's not super powerful, but it's just comforting. Like, if you're in the mood for soft rock, like, this is very comforty, like, easy listen.
Yeah, this one, lyrically, he tells a story of when he was 10 and riding his bike down a hill, something happened, and he was in the hospital, and a nice elderly lady helped him up or whatever. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way he structures the verse where it's him singing, like, Little Boy, and I'm just – I don't know. It's musically, I like it. Lyrically, I don't know. It's still undecided on this one.
That's a funny thing you bring up there, is because, like, now I'm thinking back to being a child and, like, falling off my bike, like, riding my ass off and falling off. If I scabbed my elbow or my arm the way I did when I was, like, 7, 8 years old, falling off a bike, I might just die.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a pussy, but maybe I would die.
Dude, the worst was scraping your knee.
Oh, because you bend it every time you walk, and it never, like, takes so long to, oh.
The elbow worst. Sucks, too, but for me, the knee was always my least favorite.
And I was never wearing elbow pads. What am I?
No,
yeah,
no.
So, you know. Anyways, weird side tangent there. But, yeah, it's grown on me. I do like this one.
Yeah, after that is Bonnie and Clyde.
Bend on a million times.
Yep.
And it's not a cover necessarily. It's just a very generic song title. It sounds kind of similar to the last song, in my opinion, honestly, but it doesn't have the extras. It's missing the banjo, missing the you know, a little bit of horns, maybe. You know, fairly simple. The lyrics are interesting, but again, it's been done, so I don't know.
Yeah, he uses the Bonnie and Clyde story to say, we never know we're going to die, so we should just say what's on our mind. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't need to hear any more Bonnie and Clyde.
Been done.
Yeah.
Move on. The last track on this album, Where We Start.
This is very country sounding.
That's the first note I have here. The banjo leads loud and proud through this song. And I guess loud and proud is just saying that, like, it is the focal point of the track. It's fairly soft and slow. Vocals kind of in a mid-level, but slightly lower and more bittersweet. I like it as a closer. I think this is perfectly placed on the album. Does it have a ton of replay value for me? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I ended up saving this one. Probably not a ton of replay value, but it's cool that he's at least trying something different.
Yeah, that's kind of where how I feel about it, too. Like we've said before, you get something different out of him. At least it's not the monotonous, you know, same old love song.
Yeah, and after this album, he does a song with Marshmello and Benny Blanco.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't listen to that.
Yeah, called You, where it's... Okay. It's cool. It's another lane where I think his voice works very well in, like,
yeah, these pop EDM kind of, like, mixes.
Yeah, limited lyrics, but yeah, not, you know, more so on the music, but, like, having someone with as good of a voice on that type of track, it usually does well.
It's the classic, like, Ellie Goulding thing.
Yeah.
Elle Goulding, Ellie Goulding, whatever.
Yeah, Lights.
Yeah. That actually might be an EDM artist that's accessible to us.
Marshmello?
No, Elle Goulding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because she does sing a lot. Or, like, maybe, like, a BB Rexha or something. I don't know.
I think we could do, like, Illenium or Marshmello. Are you familiar with Illenium?
I maybe know a song or two.
Because they do, it's, like, in that EDM vein, but they always have, like, prominent artists come on.
That's
Tom
cool.
DeLonge did a track or two with them, and, you know, it was actually really good.
Okay. Yeah, I think I vaguely remember talking about that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, check it out, for sure. Anyways, so that wraps up Nation of Two. There's some hits on this album. There's some misses on this album. I probably wouldn't listen front to back again, but I definitely took something away from it.
I think there's more good than bad, too.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a bad album. Let me not put it that way. I just...
Yeah, I guess nothing's really, like, bad.
There's just something not quite there, like, as a full album. It feels like, and this is maybe a trap that newer artists are falling into as streaming becomes more of a source of revenue, is that like the album is only a conduit for the singles, and that's a bit what this album feels like to me. You know what I'm saying, though?
I do know what you're saying. Cause that's
I think pop artists in particular fall into this trap, and I'm not saying like the very top of the top in pop don't do this, but you know, you're kind of middle class pop artist, very much is like driven to put out a few singles, and the album is what it is. You know, it's not the focal point.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. A lot of that comes from the label too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. It's monetized that way, so it makes sense that that's how it is. But when you look at a Taylor Swift, when you look at a Beyonce, who we talked about earlier, even Harry Styles, like, it doesn't feel like the album's fallen off in spite of the single.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some of the other people who are kind of like trying to get to that level, sometimes it does.
Gotcha.
Alrighty.
Yeah, it's interesting too. So this album came out in 2018, first one in 2014, third one in 2023. It's taking a lot of time off in between albums, but
in fairness, there was a little bit of a break in the action. You know, there was a couple years where it would have been, thank God you didn't put out a COVID album.
True.
Man. Yeah.
True.
But I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Like, for a guy who's not like an A-lister in the pop music streams, like, that's a lot of time to be taken between albums.
Although his streaming numbers are, he may not be an A-lister, but he's pretty, he's next
B-list,
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's pretty popular.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I don't have a ton of context to like make that statement, but I wouldn't doubt it. It makes sense to me. This falls.
I think a lot of his hits too get a lot of radio play.
Yeah, for sure. And I've heard Riptide on commercials, and
yeah,
probably George. I'd have to think about it, but I've heard the hits. But I just don't put them in the same category as like some of these A-listers, right? So, it is what it is. Anyways, so our own sweet time comes around. And something has changed. I'm not sure what it is. I think he's been kind of like tiptoeing the edge of it, but this is significantly poppier. And that's not to say his previous work wasn't poppy, but this feels like very, like, not very. That's even a strong way of putting it. But it's just got more of those pop elements to it, where you get the synth drums, you get like synthesizer. Kind of mixed in on some of these tracks. You get the vocal effects that you haven't seen yet in his catalog. And this is what I was talking about earlier, where, like, there's a couple songs that I'll talk about as we get through it, where I was just kind of like, who's doing this to you? Like, there's no way you were like, this is what I want for this song. There was somebody you were working with were like, hey, like, we should do this. And you kind of just fell into it. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right, but
there's also a couple songs where they do mix it up, and it works.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, Clarity comes to mind. Like, that's a more poppy song where it's like, that's a hit.
Yes, very poppy. I kind of agree there. It's not one of my favorites, but I hear what you're saying. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't want to blow my load just talking in general, so let's just get into it. It opens with Don't Fade. Same thing I said about the last album. It's just a lackluster open. I do kind of like what he's doing on the mic here with this, like, gospel-y chants mixed with harmonizing thing.
The humming is great.
Yeah, it's great. You got this kind of, like, quiet bump-bump-clap, like, drum beat underneath, quickly moving along, bits of piano mixed in. It's a nice, like, fun open. I just, like, I needed a little bit more. Like, lean into it hard. I don't know.
Yeah, to me, this one is nice. It's another, like, calming, relaxing one. I like the humming a lot. I think it's a...
Yeah, like, ham it up a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's a good song, though. Like, this is one I think I did end up saving off the album.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad track. I just ham it up.
Yeah, and this is another one about being in love with someone. I wish you could see what I see when I'm seeing you. Classic love line.
Tale as old as time.
Tale as old as time. You're hot.
All right. Next one, Solid Ground. You get this like country sounding kind of plucky riff with piano just like humming underneath. Higher level vocals sweetly softening the blow on this broken heart. Horns coming in late to like kind of all wrap it up. I thought this is a good one for sure. Just kind of like good in the, it's a good second track.
Yeah, this was one. They started off writing a 90-second song for a Netflix movie. They didn't have the name of the movie, but
gotcha.
Netflix ended up going for another song, so they took what they had and turned it into this.
A full track, yeah.
And it's pretty good. It's another song about being there for someone. This is where I had noted in my notes, like, he's just rinsing and repeating. Like, lyrically, this is the same stuff on the third. Like, just, I don't know. It's where it's
give
like,
give me something
right,
a little deeper.
Yeah, like.
Or just different, yeah.
Like, is there a group of fans out there where, like, you think they only listen to, like, love songs like this? Kind of in the same vein of, like, oh, I don't know. I mean, we listen to a lot of, like, alternative and harder rock, but I also listen to, like, this or rap. Like,
I think there are people, dude. Like, I definitely know people who are, like, country, you know, full all through and really don't listen to anything else. I know people that are very much stuck in a pop, like,
yeah,
you know, category. Which is an interesting note you bring up that I'll explore deeper on the Taylor Swift episode. But, yeah, there's certainly an audience for just this. And I think of, like, people who are, like, big fans of Michael Bublé. Like, what has he done his whole career? That guy's rich, you know? I haven't listened through his full catalog, but from my sampling of Michael Bublé, it doesn't strike me as a lot of, like, conflict in his music. It's very much a lot of love songs. So
yeah, I guess it always stands out to me when an artist has like an album dedicated to like one event or thing in their life. Like I think like Kanye West, like 808s and Heartbreaks, or even Mac Miller's later albums, where it's like very clearly like it's different subject matter. They're at different points in their lives. It's like just making something different is, even if it doesn't always work, it's nice to try.
Yeah, it changes it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it doesn't always work is the very key point of that sentence, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's worse than the previous stuff. But
yeah,
when you're on your third album and this is 2014 to 2023, three albums in 9 years, and you're just making a lot of the same types of songs,
it gets tiresome.
Yeah.
Round it out. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Next track, Missing Piece. Quicker, kind of shuffly pop rock song here. I like what he does on the mic. Works really well through all his levels. You get this wild mix of percussion sounds between maracas, stick clicks, pounding drums, even a little bit of hand cymbal to it. Background vocalizing, like the harmonizing on the back, is great. This is one of my favorite songs off the album, for sure.
Mm, it's funny. This is my least favorite of his songs with like 200 million plus streams.
Gotcha.
I still like it. I don't love it, like, whereas I love, like, Saturday Sun, Riptide.
Right.
You know, those types of songs. But I don't know. I just don't think it's as catchy as his other huge hits.
Okay.
But this is the huge hit off the album.
Yeah, it's like I said, I like the percussion work, and this is kind of this is maybe the pinnacle of that, so.
Gotcha. And subject matter-wise, just about being separated from the person you love. Nothing crazy.
Sure. Next one, Catalonia. Similar sound to the last one, kind of, but you swap in a ukulele for a guitar. A bit more train sounding than anything here, too. I don't have a ton of notes on this. I like it, and I love it.
Yeah, so he'd spent time in Catalonia which is a town in Barcelona with his...
Oh, I thought it was a... Or what's that, like, micro nation out there?
I don't know.
Anyways, there's, like, a micro nation in Spain that's close to Barcelona. Anyways.
Gotcha. But yeah, so, you know, he sings, hey, Catalonia, I was just getting to know you. But it's about the time he spent there with his girlfriend. So it's all right.
Cool.
It's, again, it's at this point, everything's kind of getting stale, but it's fine. The track after that is Way That I'm Going. This one I do like a little bit more. It's a sweeter, slower love song. Still kind of standard Vance Joy in terms of lyrics. Like, yeah, this one is a little bit more about knowing you're on the right path.
Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off.
Oh, no, that
else.
I mean, that was pretty
yeah. this is an interesting one. It's close to like a soft rock piano ballad, but it's a little bit deeper than that, a little bit more complex. Mid-low range on the mic for most of it, but really secure and comforting. Very simple three-note acoustic riff with the occasional like heavy bass drum hit. Angelic harmonies kind of in the back. It's not my favorite song, but I think it's beautifully composed.
Mm.
One of his best ballads, in my opinion. Not his best, but very good.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
The country I was thinking of was Andorra.
I'm not familiar.
I think that's also the scene of Princess Bride.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, anyways. Kind of a little, it's like a little country between France and Spain.
Gotcha.
Anyways. Alrighty. Next one, Every Side of You. Is where you get the pop elements of it, at least first one to me. Or maybe not the first one, second one. Up-tempo, plucky riff with like booming piano notes underneath, kind of complementing it. Which, like, the piano is so bassy that it kind of, like, replaces the drums. You don't really hear drums in this track, but the piano is so heavy and booming that, like, you get that vibration sound to it. Vocals kind of a mid-high to high range for the most part. Claps playing part of the, like keeping the beat along. Really smooth sound here. I do like this one a lot.
Yeah, I like this one, too. And another love song, Every Inch of Your Body, Show Me Every Side of You. It's funny, he got some inspiration for some of the lyrics from The Sopranos, which I would have not, that would not have been on my big board for inspiration for Van's Joy. But it's funny enough, my wife and I are watching Sopranos right now. I've never seen it before.
Yeah, neither have I.
And so he said, my sister and I were watching heaps of The Sopranos during COVID. Tony Soprano was saying to his therapist, what happened to Gary Cooper, the strong and silent type? And he took, you know, the strong and silent type. Like, that's one of the lines he uses in the song, which
okay.
is kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. I do remember, like, we just watched that episode from the last couple of weeks.
Oh.
So I actually remember, like, the scene.
Yeah, the moment. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. All right, this is the song you were pumping up earlier, Clarity. This is the first of the two tracks that I was talking about where the vocal element is significantly different. It's hard to explain without just listening to it, but you get this very intentionally like radio-friendly sound,
yeah.
in my opinion.
Yeah.
A little bit bassier, and maybe a tinge like heavier. Not so bassy as it is just like thicker. You know, you can very much tell this is not his typical vocal cadence, vocal sound here, but I think that's part of it too. I think this was maybe designed as a radio single. Super tuned up keyboard gets a lot of playtime here. There's no guitar. It's really the keyboard, like, bringing it along. Claps and horns round out the beat. I think the vocals take me out of this one, but the music's cool.
Yeah, I like this one. This is definitely, like, when they're like, you know, up next on 98.7 KRJ Radio.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Vance Joy, Clarity, and then it plays the part in the chorus where he's going, it was you, it was you, it
yeah,
was you. Like,
yeah.
That's definitely, like, the radio snippet.
Yeah. They'll read off, like, three songs. Coming
yeah.
up next after the break.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, something about this one where it's super, super poppy, super catchy, and I really like this one for something different.
I hear you. Yeah, I get that for sure.
Even if it is like lyrically too, it's another love song. It's just standard Vance Joy love song.
Yeah,
yeah.
The next one is the other one that strikes me as very radio pop star type sound. It's got that same vocal effect on it. This is Wavelength. It's yeah, like I said, it sounds like they added a little bit of like smooth bass to his voice. You got this odd kind of like 70s folk riff on the guitar here. It's slow and just like chunky. You know, buzzy synth fading in and out on the big moments here, which is also strange. You haven't really heard a lot of that, and now you're getting it. This is what I was talking about in the preamble to this album, where, like, he's adding these pop elements that he hasn't done yet, and it's not a full-on, like, barrage of it, but you get a couple tracks like this where it happens. Simple kick drumming as part of the beat here. Again, this vocal doesn't do it for me, so this is not one of my favorites either.
Yeah, this one's just all right. Lyrically, another love song. I don't have a – I'm sure this is a terrible comp, but my nose, it almost sounds like it'd be at like an Indian wedding or like an ethnic wedding, like that type of sound.
I think I hear what you're saying. I can't quite put it on it either, and yeah, I'm not sure that's a great comp, but
I couldn't think of anything better.
I think I know what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, there's just a lot of different instruments. Like,
yeah, there are a ton of different sounds for sure.
Yeah.
All right, next one, Boardwalk. Now we're back to the authentic Vance Joy, in my opinion. It's still different, but it's authentic. You get that vocal back. Shuffly pop song, simple strummy acoustic riff, and the like clacky, kind of clicky percussion. Another one that reminded me of Train and One Republic, but a little bit more his style, where it's kind of that like upbeat, like folky pop. Good, not great track here.
Yeah, I would say the same. It's good. you know, choose me and I'll love you the best. That's the lyrical sentiment.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy, nothing new. It's a good chorus, but again, just kind of stale.
Totally agreed. All right. Next one. Looking at Me Like That. Light, kind of simple clap along here. Musically quiet. Really leaning on the vocals. And he's ripping it off. Booming vocals on this one. And he's layering his vocal on top of himself, I think at least. And I think that's a powerful tool here because the music's not really like giving him a whole lot.
No.
But he's making the most out of what it's doing on the mic. It sounds great. He's getting through the levels too, like up and down levels, up and down range. I really think this is one of his best tracks on the mic. And although I may not like listen to this all the time, like this might be something I skip occasionally, I think this is great work from him.
Gotcha. Yeah, vocals are good. I don't like the music in this one, really.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah. He said he had a line in his phone on this one, "Don't stop looking at me like that." And that was the inspiration for the song. Is kind of poking fun at him, like, "Do you really have to put that one in your phone? Don't stop looking at me like that." Like, that's,
yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Alrighty. Last track? No, two more.
Yeah, two
this
more.
This one, it's titled This One. Banjo's back, baby. And they got the high tune keyboard on this one, which is an interesting mix, but it is good. Quick, fun claps making up the percussion. Vocals are bright, happy, mostly in a mid-high range. It's got this very like classic pop love song to me. Like male vocalist kind of love song.
Yeah.
I like this one.
And this one's more personal to him. It's about the day he met his girlfriend. So the lyrics are actually really personal. I do like this one. Again, it's another love song with that similar Vance Joy sound. And if you like it, you're going to like it. If you're looking for something different, this isn't it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. All right. And then the last track on this album, Daylight. I don't know how to place this song because this is a beautifully sweet song, very lovey-dovey, but it also has this, like, the music is kind of bittersweet to it.
Mm.
You know, it's that kind of just, like, sad, bassy piano that doesn't seem to mix. It because the lyrics are so, like, lovey-dovey, but the music is not. And maybe that's intentional. I guess it is, but I don't know. It's just a strange confluence to me. The other note I have here, this is the song they play at the end of The Bachelor when the guy proposes. You finally get this track.
Yeah. Yeah, on the nights that seem endless, you're like Daylight, babe. Another love song lyrically, and musically it's a softer, slower. It's all right. I wouldn't probably come back to it a ton.
You know, it's an interesting thought about that. So you know how I'm not a huge fan. Well, I'm not a fan of The Bachelor, but my mom and my sister watch it, and so I think about this sometimes. It's like, naturally, on The Bachelor, the man proposes to the woman, and the woman that he doesn't want. There's normally two girls at the end. The one girl he doesn't want, he doesn't propose. He's like, hey, da da da, da, it's not gonna work out. Da da da. When it's The Bachelorette, both men propose, and the one guy gets left out of need. It's even more crushing than it is on The Bachelor, dude. It's fucking miserable.
That's pretty funny. They make him do that.
Oh, it's sometimes, like, occasionally I've seen it where, like, he'll kind of, like, start crouching, and she, like, puts a hand on his shoulder, like, don't. It's brutal. But, like, that's the moment of television, baby. That's what they're going for. That's the fucking money shot for that show.
Yeah.
It's wild, though.
I don't know how anyone could waste their time, and I know a lot of people that watch the show. Some of my I think Jink watches it, but maybe he has been forced to watch it. I don't know, but
yeah.
I don't understand how you could. That's how you choose to spend an hour of your evening.
I mean, know? I'm not a reality TV guy. It'll never be for me either. But there's certainly an audience for it. Let me tell you.
Yeah, farmer bachelors, old bachelors, young bachelors.
I do love. Like I said, not a big fan of the show, but then they have, like, a studio show at the end with all the other girls or guys who, like, didn't make the cut.
Yeah, that's always
that's
funny
the
when they
pass, dude.
All the drama resurfaces.
That I could sit and watch every time. Or, like, they'll get these girls on, like, Andy Cohen. Andy's awesome. Andy Cohen makes me fucking laugh, dude. And, yeah, that's the best part of these shows for me, but I could do without reality TV for the most part.
Yeah.
Anyways, Vance Joy. Yeah, so Daylight. Good close, good good work here. But it's just a strange song for me.
Yeah. And yeah, at the end of the day, if his next two albums are more of the same, like, I'll probably save the top two or three songs and not give it as much of a listen. It's just.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree entirely. It's just not like my genre. I don't know. It's not something that like I seek out regularly. There's certainly tracks that like I would very much enjoy listening every time it comes on shuffle.
Yeah, but like Riptide, Georgia, Saturday yeah, Sun.
For the most part, I'm just kind of left unimpressed is a strong word, but unfulfilled. So, and that's no knock on Vance. That's a knock on the genre as a whole.
Yeah, I think albums were probably in harmony here, that it's just the reverse order of when they were put out. So his first album being the best, second album being the second best, third album being the third best.
I actually have Nation of Two at third, but I wouldn't argue too hard about it. Like,
okay.
Yeah, it is what it is. Yeah, so if you want to get into songs and concert set lists, then let's do that. I'm searching for one more song for this list.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and rattle mine off. So 10 to 1 here. One of These Days, Alone With You, I'm With You, Red Eye, Clarity, Mess Is Mine, We're Going Home, Saturday Sun, Georgia, Riptide.
Okay, I fuck with that. 10 to 1 for me. One of These Days, Fire in the Flood, This One, Wasted Time, Missing Piece, Mess Is Mine, Lay It On Me, Red Eye, Riptide, Georgia.
Okay.
I think we had a lot of the same songs.
Yeah, I think we swapped Saturday Sun for Fire in the Flood, and then another one, you had Missing Piece, and I had Clarity.
Yeah, and actually, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Concert set list?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm doing this on the fly. It's so hard to do the soft rock concert set list. Like, but yeah, I guess, I don't know. Why don't you do yours?
Let me go. I'm opening with Riptide. I just think it's a fun way to like get people into it, even though it is going to be kind of like a softer, like more easygoing show. I think it's a fun way of getting people into it. And like, that's one of those songs you can start playing from behind the stage and like just walk out to it, and everybody's already on their feet ripping.
Yeah.
We're going into the encore with Saturday Sun. Next up on the encore is Mess Is Mine, and then closing with Georgia.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to open with TNT. Get the people going.
That would be fucking awesome.
If he just did a cover of like some hard rock.
He's doing Metallica on the way out to the stage.
No, I'll open with Clarity. It's poppier, upbeat, and still a good song. And then for the encore, we'll open with Saturday Sun. Then we'll do Riptide, and then we'll close the encore with We're Going Home, because everyone will be going home after that.
Oh, I kind of like that. I didn't think about that, but I do like that. That's cool. Alrighty, that's all for Vance Joy.
Yes.
We're going to do Taylor Swift right after this, so stick around for more, you know, more BSing as we get into that episode, because I have a few things that happened in the last few weeks that I'd like to talk about.
Perhaps we should have done the Kendrick Cole Drake beef on the Vance Joy and then save the Mac Miller for the Taylor Swift. I don't know what the Venn diagram is for Taylor Swift fans that also give a shit about Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole beefing, but I guess we'll find out.
I guess we're going to find out. Alrighty, guys, that's all for Vance Joy. Follow us on socials, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at Flip the Record. Like, review, subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Thanks for listening.
I'll catch you on the next one.